Welcome to the Actual Fluency Podcast. Each week you'll find inspirational, motivational interviews with some of the world's best language learners, industry experts, all trying to help you to learn foreign languages better, faster, and more efficiently. And here we go. If you're looking for a language teacher to enhance your language learning, then I highly recommend Italki. Italki is the world's biggest tutoring platform, and you can find thousands of teachers and tutors at very reasonable prices. Get a free lesson after completing your first lesson by going to languageteacher.co. Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 144 of the Actual Fluency Podcast. Today I'm joined by Katie Harris, who's the founder of the blog Joy of Languages. And Katie fell in love with languages as soon as she realized she could learn them by doing fun stuff, like going to the pub with native speakers or watching Netflix. She speaks Italian, French, Spanish, as well as some German and Chinese, and believes that there's no such thing as being bad at languages. With the right strategies, anyone can learn. And this is something I believe in completely as well. I don't think there's a language learning gene or some people are better than others. I think with the right methods and with the right attitude, which is very important, anyone can really learn a foreign language. If you think about it, we've all done it at least once, right? Yeah, okay, that was with a lot of help and certainly a lot of input, but you know, it is possible. So in the episode today, we talk about Katie's journey and why she created Joy of Languages and what our future plans are. So check out the episode and I'll see you in the next one. Cool. Well, Katie, welcome to the Actual Fluency Podcast. It's a pleasure to have you.
And thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And to start everything off, do you want to just give the listeners an introduction to who you are, where you're from, and how you discovered language learning as a hobby?
Yeah, so I'm Katie Harris. I'm originally from a little town close to Sheffield in the UK. And I discovered language learning as a fun thing, as a hobby, when I was already an adult. I think I was about 22. So it was, I didn't particularly have a positive experience with languages at school. Like most people, I was bottom of the class. It was just something I just didn't really understand, like trying to remember verbs and vocabulary, and I just didn't really get what languages were as a subject. I think it felt like it all went over my head and it was very confusing. And I had a similar experience at university like that. I tried to take Italian as an elective and same problems. And then after about 2 years of really, really struggling with Italian as an elective at university, I went to a language course in Rome where it was totally different. The teacher had no books, no pens and paper, and she just made us talk about things that were interesting and gave us feedback. And that was when I discovered, of course, it was a struggle at first, but that was when I discovered that actually languages are about communication. And when you have patient teachers who encourage you to use the language for communication rather than just trying to memorize stuff, that they can actually be really, really fun and enjoyable to learn. Yeah, so I guess that's how it all started anyway. And then since I discovered that really worked for me, learning Italian, so to just try and force myself to speak it, even if I didn't necessarily know the perfect way to express things, I set myself a little rule. So I came to Italy to study abroad and I said, okay, a whole year, try not to speak any English unless it's with friends and family. And I did that. And at the beginning, it was really, really difficult. But through doing that, I met some really nice Italians. At the beginning, they didn't really want to talk to me that much because I didn't speak Italian that well. So communication was quite difficult. But over time, I made Italian friends. And over time, it was a really positive experience. I got more into the culture. And I think that was what made me fall in love with languages. So then I thought, wouldn't it be cool to do this with French so that then I could connect with French people? And so this wasn't through immersion. I started studying French in Italy, but I was doing it trying to still use it for communication. So I would meet French people, French tutors, and try and have conversations with them. Try and read and listen a lot in French. And that after a while, after a couple of years, that seemed to work. I went to Paris and I could talk to people. It was a little bit slow and embarrassing at first, but over time, just like with Italian, it started to work. And then after that was just it, really. I was like, this is amazing. I can learn these languages and connect with people. So I've just been learning languages ever since.
Fantastic. And how long were you in Italy? You said, was it just a year or did you stay longer after?
So it's been, it's been on and off. At the moment, I'm actually based in Milan. Ooh. And so I've been living here on and off since 2009. Oh God, 10 years. That makes me feel old.
Wow, that's a long time. But I guess that shows that you chose the right place. I mean, a place can be nice for a year or less, but if you actually stayed there for 10 years, you must have really liked it.
Yeah, it has its challenges, but I like the lifestyle. I like the way that people are laid back. They take time to do things that are still important, like eat together, cook together.
Good coffee.
Good coffee, exactly. Good mozzarella.
Yeah, the coffee thing is not something one should do in the UK, that's for sure. I think that's more instant coffee than anything else, unfortunately.
Yeah.
but what language was it that you were having in school? Was it French or German?
It was German. Mm. So I also actually did a couple of years of Spanish as well in school. Mm-hmm. And it's just crazy when I think back to it. I literally couldn't remember one phrase. I could remember stuff like "Dónde está la biblioteca?" And that was pretty much it.
Very important sentence, of course.
Yeah, where's the library?
But I think that's the sad state of language learning in schools, unfortunately, is that first of all, not many students are naturally interested in it because they get sent through all these grammar drills and all these like forcing memorization of words. Just single words, not even sentences. And it's just not a very good combination for students in that age group because they're not interested in that kind of learning. At least that's my theory. You really need a teacher to go above and beyond and really break with the norm and do a lot of interaction and like games and music and really get the students involved because otherwise they just don't care about it. And they're unfortunately, the tests are not very good either because we're testing people or students in those years. It's basically about what does this mean, like word-wise, you know, or summarize this very easy text or read this or, you know, and unfortunately, reading and understanding a piece of text is very, very far from asking even the simplest of questions to a native speaker.
But hopefully I have to say, go ahead.
That. Yeah, hopefully we can improve that through all these initiatives and podcasts and conferences, and hopefully it will spill over to the educational world and we can get some slightly better language classes. That would be great.
Yeah, I have to say I can't speak for what it's like now because I'm talking, speaking of feeling old, I'm talking about probably about 15, 16, 17 years ago when I was at school. So I think it may have changed then, but certainly it may have changed now since then, but certainly one thing I kind of try and do with my blog is to undo the damage of the people that went through the same kind of classes that I did. because it makes people think that they're not good at learning languages, which was what I had.
Or that they can't do it at all. Which is even worse.
Yeah, and I still have, you know, when I talk to friends and family who are in exactly the same position that I would have been in had I not joined this really cool class where the teacher encouraged us to speak a lot. And so I can see that, it's nothing to do with natural talent. Of course, it can be to do with interest and motivation, but you can increase that depending on what you do. But I think in the past, certainly the education system has done some damage because it's, yeah, it's it. At least when I was at school, it made people think that language learning is a certain way without realizing that actually there are many other ways to learn a language, more effective ways, just by, I think the main thing that I felt when I was at school was that learning a language was all about getting ready for talking to a native speaker. That was almost like the final performance, which you would do maybe after 3, 4, or 5 years of learning the language in classes. So it was all kind of about preparation. Whereas now I realize that actually for me, you can't kind of, well, I guess, and it's all about preparation and then trying to learn enough so that you won't make mistakes when you start speaking. Whereas for me now I realize it's all about just throwing myself in at the deep end at the beginning, looking like an idiot. And if I do that for long enough, eventually I won't look so much like an idiot anymore.
Yeah, for sure. And just using it early on rather than waiting and waiting, you know, this idea of, you said it very well, you know, you're leading up to speaking at the end. Whereas yeah. I think that this whole idea of speaking from day one is actually brilliant because it's such a good feeling, even if you just say hi in that language. Or how are you, you know?
Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, languages are about people. And what the school system did for me when I was at school was it stripped languages of all of the good stuff, you know, all like people and cultures and traveling, and it just stripped it down to learning vocabulary.
Yeah, exactly. That's it, yeah.
Yeah, whereas I think if you can start speaking early on and accept... I feel like we should be doing more learner training to train people what learning a language is actually like, you know, so expect that you will make mistakes. It will feel uncomfortable at the beginning. But if you just push past that, then that's how you'll learn, rather than it being like, no, you have to learn all of this so that you won't go through that uncomfortable stage. Because for me, that's not really possible. You have to go through that stage.
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated as well because people are so different. Like you have very extroverted people who will jump in with when they know half a word. And then you have people yeah. who are very shy and introverted who are, you know, they wouldn't even go up and speak to people in their native language. So how could they yeah. ever be expected to speak to someone in a different language as well?
Yeah.
So it's obviously difficult to find a common way that could work for everyone. But I think... Yeah. pushing people to speak sooner is a good quick win for everyone, I think, because if we can encourage more early on, then those early wins usually translate into longer term success rather than just preparing and never really getting anywhere.
Yeah, and I also think it doesn't necessarily, so when I say using the language early on and feeling uncomfortable, for me, it doesn't necessarily have to be speaking. So I think like the speak from day one idea is really, really cool. I usually try and start speaking as soon as possible. Maybe not from day one, but maybe from like day 15 or something. But there are also, you know, for example, like Steve Kaufman or Kaufman in my UK accent. people who, so I think there is absolutely nothing wrong, and I've recommended this to people before, people who are real introverts, there's nothing wrong with spending a long, long time at the beginning without speaking. But I think the difference is that, so just to clarify, so Steve Kaufman does lots of reading and listening at the beginning. So he kind of tries to absorb the language as much as possible before he starts speaking. And I think there's lots of people follow that technique and it seems to work for them. And I think that is a good technique as well. So you don't necessarily have to start speaking from day one, but the difference is that there you are still using the language.
Yeah. I mean, it works. What works is basically is the golden rule, isn't it? If something doesn't work for you, then, and other people are saying, oh, it's great, do this, but it doesn't work for you, then obviously keep trying until you find that method. I think that Steve's yeah. method is quite advanced, I think is quite hardcore as well. So I would be surprised if many new language learners, the people we're trying to maybe rope in with this discussion, would find that particularly enjoyable, because it's very much focused on doing a lot of reading, a lot of passive skill building, whereas something like, just to take the polar opposite, something like Benny, where you learn three words and you go and shout at some you know, it's the complete opposite. It's the minimum viable sentence or language. I probably somewhere in between is probably the best, but it's probably the people who think you can only do it one way that need to see it, that you can actually do both, and there's a whole spectrum.
Definitely.
It's not easy though.
Yeah. So I would say, for me, the way I see it is that you can do either, and they both work. But the difference here is that, so the difference compared to, for example, when going back to when I was at school, is that here, even if you're not speaking, even if you're just, so you could start, for example, with very, very, very simple texts. So it's not so hardcore texts that have been adapted for beginners.
Right.
But the real key there is that you're not just learning things in isolation. You know, it's not the like, well, I'll learn all of these grammar rules and I'll learn all of this vocabulary, and then one day I'll be able to put them together and understand what I read, or understand what I listen, or what I hear. Or
that's school learning for you. That's exactly how I felt school was like. You build all these pieces together and you never really get anywhere, because it's like a fallacy. It's a fallacy that's how you learn a language. It's not, you don't do it by learning everything and then the puzzle connects and then you suddenly are fluent.
Exactly.
It's really not how it works. Each section is much more important than the whole picture, I would say. So it's definitely an interesting, it's problematic, I think, for the schools that they're so focused on this. For the learner who's listening, who's outside of school, I don't actually know what my the average age of the actual fluency listener is. I would imagine it's slightly older than school age. That person would probably gain the most, I think, from getting a tutor early on, like an iTalk tutor or otherwise, because I think often there's these limiting beliefs that classes and tutoring is quite expensive and quite hard to find, or you need to you need to go to some school, or it's in the evening somewhere far away. Whereas the reality is that now you can hire somebody to come on Skype, a bit like we're talking now, for a couple of dollars an hour. So that opportunity is really open to everyone, and the teacher, if you find a good one, can really support you from the level you are at. Like, I remember for my Russian, I was so terrible at Russian that we could barely speak together, but she was so patient, and we ended up speaking for an hour. And it was so slow. And, you know, if you listen to it, you would think, what are these idiots doing? You know, it's a complete waste of time. But it really gave me a massive win and a real sense of achievement that, whoa, I just spoke in Russian for an hour. Okay, it was mostly incorrect grammar and it was very slow, but the person in the call understood what I was saying. And that's the whole aim of languages. So if anything, I'd like to push that.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. And that tends to be the way that I do it as well. I mean, online classes, like, that's been for me over the last few years. I think that's part of the reason why I've ended up doing what I'm doing now, is because it's made learning a language so easy and accessible to me, where it wasn't before. So it's helped me to learn more languages more quickly. So yeah, I would totally, totally agree with that. If you're really, really introvert and you think like, no, there's no way I could do that, then I think there is something to be said for spending a long time absorbing the language, but you can choose which one works. But I think we could kind of develop, or we could come up with a new catchphrase. Like, instead of speak from day one, it could just be like, get your hands dirty from day one.
Definitely, yeah.
So whatever you're doing, like, it's not preparation, like, you're actually starting to struggle through and like try and understand things or try and say things like right from the beginning, because that's
and there's no right or wrong. Like, there's just no way that something is better than the other. It will all depend on the learner, and also
definitely
how you use the materials. So I would say it's better to do something every day that might not be quote unquote ideal than it is to sit around and do nothing because you haven't found the ideal method yet.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
I think we can all
just do something. Yeah. And it doesn't matter what you do, just do something. Don't worry about it, don't think about it, just do something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And once you do something every day, you'll be surprised how quickly you can actually learn things, because that time, it's funny that our perception of time is so warped in a way, because we imagine school and we think, oh, okay, I've had German for 8 years. Oh my God, I've had endless hours of German. But I actually did the math and the number came to something like 300 hours.
Yeah.
So for 8 years, I had 300 hours of German. Like most people watching Netflix every day would watch more than double that a year in binging Netflix. So if you think about it, an hour a day, that's 365
and
a quarter, I suppose, hours of language study a year, which is more than what I did in 8 years of study. Okay,
yeah.
It wasn't a focused language program, don't get me wrong, but it's sometimes we need to look at the hours and not the years or even months or weeks, because you can just get so much in and you'll be surprised how quick you can learn compared to the classes, because you can't compare it, you know?
Definitely. Yeah. And I always find that question really difficult when somebody says, oh, how long have you been studying for? Because it's like, well, I started 10 years ago and then I did a course that wasn't very helpful for like 3 months, and then I didn't do anything for 3 years, and then I started again. So it's very difficult to answer. Whereas I agree. A more meaningful question is maybe
how many hours?
How many hours? Yeah. How many hours have you spent studying it? Which doesn't come as naturally, but I think that's the real key. It doesn't make any sense to think about it in terms of years.
No, and I think if I looked at my, and suddenly I could explain my level, because I was like, I was kind of frustrated with German because I'd had it for 8 years in school, and I'd gone to Germany several times for vacations, just short week long vacations, and I was just only at about a B1, bordering on B2 level, and it was just like, I was happy that I could speak German, I was fully functional, you know, I could understand 99% of what people were saying, and I could make myself understood without using a word of English, obviously with grammar mistakes here and there. But I was just a bit frustrated because I thought I spent 8 years on this. But then as I did the math, I realized, well, that explains everything, because just because I spent 8 years doesn't mean that I spent a lot of time on it. It took a long time to get those hours in. And I could use that for my Russian as well, because I was like, okay, I've been studying Russian for years now and I've just nowhere near my goal. And I started adding up like my feeble efforts, and it was like, well, Chris, you've spent 100 hours on it, how far do you expect to be, you know? And it's really important to look at it that way.
I think that's a really, really good point, because so many people get really, really discouraged because they look at they might say, oh, well, I've been studying Italian for 2 years, or learning a language takes a long time, and I think it's really important to give yourself that time and to be patient and not to beat yourself up and think, oh, I should be further ahead now, because everybody does it, and it can be really, really demotivating, and I totally agree that actually when you think about it like that, and you can if you think about it in terms of the amount of hours you've spent studying, and there's also the CEFR framework, which just is a very, very rough guide to what kind of level you should be after a certain number of hours that you've spent studying. And that's usually, like you said, that's usually really, really reassuring because you can see actually that most of the time you're roughly around the level you should be after the amount of time you've spent studying.
Yeah, and there's so many moving parts to the language, right? So if you're very extroverted, you might tend to be much better at speaking the language than you are at, let's say, writing it. So, the levels are a little bit weird in that sense, that you can be B1 by being, you know, A1 in writing and C1 in speaking or something like that.
Yeah. like my French.
Unless you're actually taking the test, then the level itself is kind of an estimation, and I,
yeah,
you know, you always
to be honest, I think even if you're taking the test, it's not. I teach people to take exams, or I have done in the past for English, and I've taken language exams myself, and yeah, they are a good indication. They're the best indication we have, but even then, they're not always ideal. You know, you can train yourself to.
I think it's nonsense. Actually, I think it's complete nonsense, and it's just a kind of a cash cow for these institutes. I guess they're government funded. Ultimately, the Goethe Institut Français and all these places, because yeah, it's important to have a testing or some kind of body that can issue. Well, is it important? I don't even know. I mean, some organizations want you to present a certificate to do certain things like language teachers and that kind of thing.
Yeah, or particularly to study abroad as well. I think it's something that yeah. has to exist.
It has to exist, yeah. But I think the idea that it actually has anything to do with what you can in the language, I think is a stretch, because you can get better at doing the tests and yeah. then there's something wrong with the whole thing. It's a bit like doing IQ tests or intelligence tests. Basically, if somebody can publish a book that says, here's how to get better results on the IQ test, you're suddenly no longer testing the intelligence of the test taker. You're just testing how well that person can prepare for the test itself.
Yeah.
and languages are exactly the same. Like, I saw my friend Gareth from How to Get Fluent. He did the Russian C1 exam, and he eventually passed it. But when you read his preparation, none of his preparation was really about getting better at Russian. It was getting better at taking the test, which had very yeah. specific tasks in it. So in a way, he was getting better at Russian, but it was like something like, write a 50-word fax, you know?
Yeah.
We'll just take a quick break to hear from one of our sponsors, and then we'll be right back. On this podcast, I've interviewed hundreds of language learners, some of the world's greatest polyglots and industry experts. And one thing they all agree on is the value of one-to-one tutoring lessons. And for this, I highly recommend italki. They have thousands of teachers in all price ranges, and they even have certified teachers who have taken diplomas or have degrees in the language you're learning. So whether you're just brushing up on your Italian ahead of a trip to Rome, or you want to master Russian to take the exam, or whatever your goals are in languages, italki has a tutor suitable for you. And compared to private tutoring offline, it's really affordable. You can find informal tutors down to $5 an hour, and you can have trial lessons for even less. So if you want to master a language from the comfort of your own home, and you even get a $10 credit when you complete your first lesson, go to languageteacher.co and check out italki. It might be the best thing you do for your language learning this year.
Yeah, I've had really similar experiences, actually, because I used to train people to take the IELTS, and I saw with that how you can. I think they do a great job doing the test, because it's a really difficult thing to do, and they're a fairly good indication. But yeah, it is absolutely learning test techniques, and that's what we tend to focus on in the lessons, really, because I want them to get a good result in the test.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so because I kind of knew this, I've always, yeah, I'm a little bit unsure about taking exams to kind of test my level in foreign languages. And if I do it, I always try and leave the actual preparation for the exam right until the end, because maybe the last couple of months, last few weeks, because if I don't do that, then I end up, like with my, I did the French C1 exam, and I ended up spending a few weeks learning stuff like 8 different ways to say however in formal writing, and that's not really why I was learning French. Right. So I didn't want to spend more than a few weeks really looking hardcore at the exam techniques, because otherwise it would have kind of taken me in a different direction to where I actually wanted to go with my French, which was pronunciation and feeling natural when I chat to people and knowing more kind of colloquial vocabulary and that kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. There's going to be two reasons to take an exam, I think. One should be to use it as a goal, like something to aim for, to make sure that you're hitting some kind of benchmark for your language learning. Because as an independent language learner, it can be sometimes hard to evaluate your progress because you're not in a classroom. You can't compare with other students and that kind of thing. But if you have a language exam goal, then you know very specifically what the requirements for each are so something like being able to understand a certain length of text, being able to compose certain things, understanding the listening. And the other one is simply if you need it for academic career or any kind of opportunity reasons, like if your employer is paying a multilingual bonus, I think that's worth doing. Or if you want a career in languages, so becoming an actual teacher or any other job profession related where a certificate could be come in handy, something like I imagine translators maybe use it. I don't know. I haven't done translation myself, but if you're doing those kind of jobs, then getting a new certificate could be a way to get clients or get a new job, even if you want to improve your career. But as the sort of casual language learner, I really find it unlikely to be of much use to take these exams because, like we said, the test comprises all four key areas, right? Like reading, speaking, listening, and writing. And if your goal is not to read Shakespeare in English, then, well, maybe that doesn't even make sense because that's old English. So English speakers have trouble with that too. But you know what I mean. Like if your goal is not to read postmodern big books that are really difficult, then you know why would you need to have a score high in sort of reading comprehension if you just want to?
Speaking of reading comprehension as well, I think that there's a problem at the higher levels that I've noticed both in the English one and the Italian one, which is so this. A bit of a confession here as an English teacher. Sometimes when I teach IELTS, I don't know the answers.
Right.
So I have to read the answers before the class and then kind of pretend to the class. I'm like, well, yeah, it's obviously that one. No, I don't actually do that. I tell them as well, because I think it's useful for them to know that sometimes. So once you get to higher levels with reading, it's almost like as if the examiner's kind of said, okay, well, now you're at an advanced level. So usually people at an advanced level can almost understand everything they read.
Yeah.
How can we make it more difficult? Let's make the questions more vague.
Right.
I have that problem as a teacher with English exams sometimes. And I've also had that problem with when I was preparing for the Italian C2 exam, I would take the test papers to my flatmates and my partner and say like, oh, what would you put here? Because maybe I didn't understand and I'd written it wrong. And a lot of the time they couldn't answer either. So it's kind of, I mean, I guess there's one argument that, well, it's also teaching you academic skills in that language. So you have to be able to interpret the question in the right way. But I think certainly if you want to just prove that you're getting closer to a native speaker, if your idea of advanced is moving towards being like an average native speaker, not moving towards not being exactly like, because even at C2 there's still a big difference, but that's not necessarily that useful taking a test where there are questions that native speakers can't answer.
Yeah, it's a bit unfair really. It comes up in other areas of language learning, like where native speakers can make mistakes, for instance, but learners cannot without being kind of weird that you know they do it all the time, but that's just I think that's part and parcel of being a language learner. You have to accept that you know it's not always easy and there's a lot of things that are working against you, but yeah, take the test if you think it will help you. I think it's a nice goal to have. You do like a 6-month challenge, okay, now I'll take the B1 exam or something. Or if you're already B1, B2, and you're like, okay, I really want to take my language to the next level. In a year from now, I'll do the C1 exam. I think that's a good way to do it. But I'm not a bit skeptical with how it actually would be of much relevance to a normal quote unquote.
Yeah, and I guess I feel like the problems that we've been talking about maybe make up probably for me like around 30% of the problem with tests, but you still have the, you know, you can't pass a C1 test if you're at an A2 level. When you're preparing for the exam, yeah, maybe 30% of it or 20% of it is testing techniques, and it's annoying because there are questions that even native speakers can't answer, but I think they are still worthwhile in the fact that maybe the 70-80% of it, you are learning, you are practicing listening and reading and writing and speaking in the language. So of course, when you're practicing all of that, your level is going to improve. Like my Italian level. No, I feel like maybe with the Italian one, I just learned test techniques actually, but certainly with the French one, I learned some techniques. I was just learning formal French, which I wasn't that interested in learning. But you know, overall, it was a positive experience, and I learned a lot more French than I would have done if I hadn't set myself that goal, because I just had that motivation and I was practicing reading and listening and writing and speaking a lot for very intensively for a few weeks, but over a few months, because I could kind of feel it looming. So I knew that I had to listen to as much French as possible and practice reading. And so, yeah, I think overall it's a positive experience, but it's really important to evaluate why you want to do the test and know that there are these kind of these problems with them as well.
Yeah, I think definitely they can be valuable. And like I said, that goal of doing the test at the end is definitely good, but maybe people can do other goals similar to that without paying £200 to Institut Français or something.
Yeah.
moving on from that, so you have a website and a podcast. Do you want to tell people when you started that and what was your basic motivation for getting into that space as well?
So the website Joy of Languages, coming back to what we were talking about a little bit before, I think the main reason that I wanted to start it was because I'd found this way to learn languages that I found by using languages to communicate, then that gave me a lot of joy, hence the name. Mm-hmm. And I could just see this difference between, you know, how people who were really struggling with learning languages seemed to be learning them the way that I used to learn them and the way that I really, really struggled with. So I wanted to kind of open a space to be able to talk about making learning languages fun and how learning languages can be fun, and that way it can be more motivating and you can make more progress. And also because I'd found this passion for languages now, so I wanted to find a way to make to work by doing something that I really, really enjoyed, which was learning languages and sharing what I learned along the way, and helping other people learn languages as well.
Mm-hmm. And do you mind just breaking down that difference between how you used to learn languages and how you do now? Maybe if you can, I don't know how complicated the idea is, but if you could give us like a cliff note,
I just remember, I think the main thing that sticks in my mind was just I would. So after a language class at university, for example, because it's slightly more recent, I remember every now and then after the class, I would like go and get a coffee and then read the chapter in the book. And it was mostly, you know, we'd do a lesson on jobs and then we'd have a list of jobs to learn. So I'd like try and memorize them, and then I'd have tests. And so I'd get my friends, I'd try and memorize. Essentially, I think there was a lot of trying to memorize lists of things, and the textbook, I wasn't particularly interested in the topics that were in the textbook. And just going back to this idea as well, I think about it all being an idea of a preparation, and that I had to do this for years and years and years, and once I'd remembered enough lists, then I could go out and talk to people. Whereas now I start trying to speak as soon as possible to connect with people from from the culture. So by online, I use iTalk as well, via online classes. And just finding, I guess, essentially, as a broad difference in approach, now the main thing that I try and do is to find ways to learn the language that I enjoy. So for me, that is finding people I can connect with, even if it's only, you know, if I'm a beginner and conversation is really a struggle, and they can help me a little bit in English as well. But just having that figure of a person that I can connect with and someone from that culture in my life makes me a lot more motivated.
Right, some practical application.
Yeah, it's a practical application, and I think the thing that makes me love languages so much is that you can talk to people from all over the world, and so I like to front end that reward, if that makes sense.
Definitely, that's a bit like the Speak One philosophy in a way.
Yeah, although I don't necessarily immediately do that. I'll wait a few weeks before I try and do that. So I do prepare a little bit.
Right.
And then, so I guess I have a balance of output and input. So output, certainly trying to connect with, find native speakers that I enjoy spending time with. And usually at the beginning, it's in online classes where I pay them, because otherwise, you know, it's going to be difficult. I can't expect them to spend an hour of me trying to string a sentence together if I don't pay them at the beginning. You know, with time, I might be able to make friends in the language later on, and I do, and I have. That's often one of my goals in the language, but certainly at the beginning it would be with a tutor. But then I also have the input side of it. So I'm a big believer in finding input that you enjoy reading and listening. So at the beginning, this is likely to be things that are made for beginner language learners. So things like podcasts, graded readers, so books that have been made simple for language learners. But then as soon as I can, I'll start to try and use things, maybe read some simple blog posts. And there's the Google Translate add-on that you can use. It's really, really cool. You just click on, once you install the extension, you just click on a word and it translates it for you on page. So that makes the reading a lot easier.
Yeah.
And Kindles do that as well, which is good. But yeah, I would say it's a balance between output, trying to talk to people I like, and input, trying to read and listen to things that I find interesting.
Right. And I can imagine the output is one of the big differentiating factors from what you used to do in school and what most people probably suffer through through school with. It's just a lack of output, really, in many ways.
Yeah, I would say lack of output, but also, you know, nobody ever said to me, like, oh, why don't you buy a magazine that you like in Italian? And here's what you could do to read it. Or, you know, here are some simple books that you might really like. And here are some techniques that you can use when you don't understand a word. Or so all that kind of stuff. I think it is certainly a lack of output, but also a lack of learner training in trying to train language learners to show them how they can find ways to learn that they enjoy via input as well. So reading and listening, which is difficult at the beginning.
Yeah, for sure.
You can't just pick up a... Yeah.
It's like nobody tells you at any point. It's just we're all in this kind of... We have to somehow go online. And I mean, for people who found this podcast, they probably know a lot of the strategies and techniques and pitfalls that we've discussed. But imagine if you're, you know, just getting out of primary school, and where would you even encounter any of this? Wouldn't go as far as call it wisdom. I mean, that might be a little self-saluting, but you know, definitely tips and tricks about
yeah.
Where would you ever get that idea? So it's kind of a, like, learner training is something that I haven't heard that word or phrase used before, but I think that makes a lot of sense that's essentially what we're all doing. This podcast is all about learner training, really, because I think also what school does, it says the teacher is important, But yeah. I think what independent learners realize is that the teacher is just a tool, you know, it's a part of, well, I guess there can be that in many ways, but
yeah. just
a way to, you know, to help you learn a language. It's not necessarily the supposed to do the learning for you.
Yeah, definitely.
So learner training is interesting. And I think that that's definitely what we're trying to do with the podcast. I think most people who are producing language learning content is trying to do that, or maybe directly yeah. even, you know, if they're producing courses or specific language materials, it's also all about learner training, but it's sort of embedded, I guess, in the materials.
Yeah, and I think if you're doing things, if you found ways to learn that you enjoy, for example, you get a graded reader and you like the story, that's also a good way then to learn grammar and pronunciation, because I think you can spark the interest first. So for example, I find I learn grammar much more easily when I have the question mark in my head. So not like a book saying, oh, you need to know this, this, and this.
Yeah.
But if I'm reading something, or I quite like the Asimil books. I like the way that they're done, because they're almost set up to make you do this. Like if you're reading a conversation, or you're reading a book, and then you think, oh, why is that word like that? And then you find a little explanation of it at the bottom. I think that works quite well. Or you can just search on the internet and say, like, oh, why is this word like this?
And you might,
I think you certainly,
because it's curiosity rather than necessity. Like you don't memorize anything that somebody tells you to memorize. But if you are curious about something and you need to learn it for a particular reason, then the memory just sticks so much better.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if it comes from that little question mark in your head, rather than the teacher being like, oh, you need to learn this, then yeah, absolutely, as you say.
And learning the grammar tables is completely ridiculous. It's like, if you think about it, I forget where I got this from, but, you know, most sentences that we say in a language is either coming from first person or second person. You know, either I'm talking about myself, which is a big part of speaking, or yeah. I'm speaking about someone I'm talking to. So you know, me and you, that's basically it.
Yeah.
And that must make up something like 90% of all conversations that we have, or all sentences, sorry, yeah. not every conversation, of course, but all the sentences. Yet, if I learn a new language, they spend ages going like, ich bin, du bist, das ist, das ist, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you have to know all of this before we move on to step two of actually saying something, which is ridiculous because most of the time, like I said, 80-90% of sentences are probably either about yourself or the one you're talking about. And you can take this point further with grammar points, something like, you know, accusative and genitive and dative and all these cases. Well, probably most of the cases would be nominative anyway, because you're just doing a simple sentence. Or, okay, accusative will happen sometimes, which is a direct object, like I have this thing. And then, you know, you need to be quite advanced to start using something like genitive.
Yeah.
In German, you know, the days of our lives are long gone. It's like, you don't need to do that, because you can always simplify that to a simpler sentence. So that really grinds my gears when it comes to grammar, is that it's everything is considered equal in every table. Whereas, you know, you never use half the stuff anyway. It's like learning 10 different fish, you know. What what do I need? I don't even know what they're called in Danish. How would I know? I don't care.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I'm certainly not against studying grammar. I think sometimes when people initially hear me speaking about learning a language, they might assume that I'm completely the natural way, no grammar, which isn't true. I do think there is a place for grammar. But it's, as you said, it should be usage based. I think the classic approach. Yeah. Or even, you know, you could learn, learn the most frequent structures.
Definitely.
And people tend to spend way too much time worrying about things that aren't going to come up that often.
Exactly.
Yeah, I remember this, and I fall into this trap as well. When I was doing online German lessons, and I said to my German teacher, I was like, oh, the cases. I was like, I can't remember the case. I've got to remember the cases. And he was like, why? Like, why don't you learn linking words?
Exactly.
Which is really interesting, because he'd obviously heard me speaking and thought that I needed linking words to sound more natural when I speak. But I was there because all of the books and the courses just try and, you know, they feel like they've done their job, I think. If they've told you all of these things exist, this is how it works, that then they're like, okay, my job here is done. But the problem with that is, you know, you get people worrying about the accusative when, or Italian's a perfect example of this, people worrying about the subjunctive when they haven't really started having conversations yet. And I think that's a shame, because it's exactly. It's a part of grammar that can be quite confusing. I had this in Italian. I was trying to learn the subjunctive before I went to that course I was talking about at the beginning. And it just really puts you off, because you think, oh, I'm never going to know all of this stuff, but I need to know all of this stuff before I can communicate. Okay. And it's not true at all. It's perfect. That's something that it's worth paying attention to, but later on and when it comes up.
Exactly. When you need it and when you get to that level, then it will be useful. And like the subjunctive, I think that's something that English native speakers don't even know how to do necessarily. So, you know, something like, were I a rich man, you know, it's probably kind of an archaic form of speaking, but you know, it does exist, and a lot of people don't know how to do it anyway. So expecting some learner who's just starting out to learn all of the grammar is just, it's really strange. It's really bad. And German is a perfect example, because most of the German sentences you make will be perfectly understood, even if you make all the cases wrong.
Yeah.
There's some really like constructed examples, like if you have only like a subject, object, and an indirect object, so you know, the dog bit the man or something, in that sentence it's really important that you put the dative at the right place, because otherwise it's the man that's biting the dog. But that's such a construed example, because normally the sentences follow a normal structure, you know. You wouldn't, it's such a, I don't know if you've ever studying any Russian or Slavic language, you can put the emphasis at the beginning of the word to make it sound a little bit more, I mean, it's often used in like poems and like, you know, some kind of creative writing, but they can also use it to emphasize. So in that language it makes more sense, but in German they're much more likely to just follow a simple structure. So even if you mess up all the cases along the way, it might, you know, grind the ears of the native speaker a little bit, but he will definitely understand, he or she will definitely understand what on earth you're trying to say. And if they don't, they'll always ask you, did you mean this? And conversation goes on. It's like that idea that you have to be perfect is really a bad idea to have circulating around.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think this comes back to the idea of learner training as well. So often I think people come to me and they say like, oh, I'm really scared of making mistakes. And if I think about the classic kind of language course and the way that it's structured, it just makes people afraid of making mistakes. So I feel like people often think that the solution to this fear is learning the accusative case perfectly or learning the subjunctive case perfectly, because when I know it, I won't be afraid anymore and I won't make mistakes, which apart from the fact that it just isn't true, Italians still make mistakes with the subjunctive, for example. So, you know, that just isn't true. But also it puts people off so much, when really the real solution to this problem is learner training again, and helping people understand that, you know, they can learn that and that will come, but they don't need to stress so much about it at the beginning. It's okay. Coming back to what you said, I really like that about how, all right, so you're speaking to a native speaker and it grates on their ears a little bit, which to be honest, I think isn't even really true, because people are so usually, that people who are worth talking to are usually quite forgiving of those little mistakes. And So often you have the other problem. You know, you're saying to native speakers, you're like, I'm trying to learn, please, please, please correct me. And they don't, because they just want to have a conversation with you. Like that, they're looking for the meaning in what you're saying. They're not looking for the grammar mistakes.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, learner training in the sense of, if you say something and the person listening to you didn't understand, that's okay. Here are some phrases you can use to manage the situation.
Yeah, or in the worst of cases, just say the English word or whatever language you might have in common. Like, yeah. It doesn't mean you have to change the whole dialogue to English, but you can just say, as in English, blah, blah, or as in German, or, like the German, blah, blah, and then continue the sentence. Yeah. I mean, that's great when you're a beginner. Like for my German level, for instance, I can pretty much talk about anything in German, even though I don't know any of the words, because I have all the, I don't know what to call it, but maybe like the roundabout vocabulary or the explanation vocabulary. I don't know what to call it, but I can basically just waffle on for ages without ever saying any of the correct vocabulary words in a field. You know, the thing about the thing, yeah. And when you do that, you have the thing.
So. That's really, really good though. And I feel like that's what we should be teaching people to do more at the beginning. Learning how to manage communication breakdowns, essentially.
Yeah. So, and not worry about failing, because, you shouldn't, like you say, I think I had a lot of that in Russian as well. I was sitting there, I was actually testing out sentences in Google Translate before I wrote them to my tutor. And it was like, Google Translate isn't perfect, first of all. And second of all, who cares if you make mistakes? That's part of learning. You shouldn't proofread every sentence you send to a casual acquaintance. That'd be awful. You wouldn't have time for that.
Yeah, I feel like that's something that I'm constantly still learning now, or getting used to now. So, for example, with both French and Spanish recently, I've started to feel like, particularly when it comes to writing, because I've started to find ways to write that I enjoy more, but it doesn't really come naturally to me. So I kind of have this slight paranoia that I should be much better at writing in Spanish and in French than I actually am. And I've been afraid of writing messages to my French teacher or to my Spanish teacher, and it takes me ages. But more recently, I've just kind of said to myself, like relearning this lesson, I was like, hey, do you know what? They are my teachers.
Exactly, yeah.
If they didn't have to correct anything I sent to them, they wouldn't have a job. So
exactly. Well, that's so true. And that's something that anyone could use, really.
Yeah. And it's been, I mean, that's been over the last month or so, and it's been so different. It's been so nice. And I'm now enjoying writing more as well. And it's made the whole experience a lot more positive, and I've learned a lot more since I kind of had that little revelation.
But it's hard to write, though. That is the hardest skill for sure. So people, I think you need to, I mean, you can obviously front load it. For most people, it wouldn't make any sense, because most people are trying to speak before they write until you get to like an intermediate stage. But I think you need quite a good vocabulary and understanding of the language before writing makes a lot of sense. Not to discourage people, I say if you want to write, start from day one and write whatever you can. But you definitely, I wouldn't worry if people weren't able to write very well if they're in the beginning stages, because it's so, so difficult to write, I feel like.
Yeah. But I feel like part of what makes writing so difficult is because we put so much pressure on ourselves for it to be good.
Good, yeah. Well, that may be, yeah. It has to have some kind of artistic or quality to it, that it has to make sense and be enjoyable and even funny.
Right.
I had oatmeal for breakfast.
Definitely, yeah. And I think if you do it in the right way, because that's what I've been doing recently, is I've been doing tasks that just take all of that away. So really, really simple tasks like 5 things that I noticed today.
Exactly, like a diary is a good way to start for many people in terms of writing.
Yeah, and it just kind of, because I think writing is good for me, at least I think writing is good if I don't put pressure on myself to be like a writer in the second language. if I don't put pressure on myself for it to be good, then writing is really useful, because I think it helps your speaking as well.
Yeah, because definitely.
Especially if you're just doing informal conversational writing. But another really good activity is to just try and think back to a conversation that you heard and try and write it in the language you're learning.
Yeah, like transcribing speech. You could even do that, yeah. I suppose, with videos or podcasts. You could try and transcribe what they're saying. That could be good for earlier on. And then later you can try and recall it from memory.
Definitely, yeah.
If you want to get better at writing.
Yeah, and I think part of the problem with writing, part of what makes it so difficult, is that you've got that combination between it's just so heavy, like, to have to do everything. Like, you have to try and get the language right and you have to try and decide what to write as well. Whereas if you can just do very, very, very simple, guided, very like day-to-day practical kind of writing, then I think that that's really useful. But as you say at the beginning, it's a bit of a struggle. It still is, even at the end for me.
Everything's a struggle, that's for sure. And even if language learning can be much easier and more enjoyable than most people experience it in school, there's still a lot of work to be done, and it's not to be underestimated. And if we're discussing these things a little bit light, as in, that's easy to do, just do this, then make no mistake, it's definitely not the intention to give off. It's just, I think it's the balance of encouraging people to try new things and also still trying to say that it's, you know, it you don't learn a language overnight just because you pick
it up. No.
You know, which is a trap I sometimes fall into here. And that's not even because I'm not even a very good language learner at all, actually. So it's not because I'm sharing my own, this is how I learned 8 languages, like some other people would be able to share on the podcast and often have done. But it's just, I talk about it so much with people that I almost have a perfect theoretical understanding of it.
Yeah.
That's why it sometimes comes off as a little bit of a casual, just do this. But in reality, if you're in it, you know, it takes a lot of organization, discipline, motivation to keep going and getting that hour done every day that we talked about earlier.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think sometimes when I talk about learning languages, it can be misconstrued as like, I was using this kind of traditional method that didn't work for me, and then pop, I found this method that worked, and then all of a sudden it was really easy. It's not necessarily that. I would say it's learning, one thing that I've learned that's made me better at learning languages compared to how I used to be is learning the right things to struggle on.
Right.
So it's still a real struggle. It still hurts my brain sometimes. It's still embarrassing sometimes. I still struggle with motivation, etc. But there are certain things that I know if I struggle with them and I persevere, then eventually I will end up speaking the language.
Yeah.
So for example, like we were saying before, I guess it's a little bit like, I feel like for me, the beginning of learning a language is a bit like Bambi learning how to walk. So I just kind of try and struggle through and then fall over and struggle through and then fall over and struggle through and then fall over. And then I still fall over now, you know, Italian, I'm C2. I still make basic mistakes every now and then where someone will just look at me and raise an eyebrow and they're like.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're never perfect. And that's a realization that people also need to realize, that just because you speak your native language doesn't mean you're perfect in it. Like, I don't know what the latest count is, but I believe there's, 200,000 words in English or something like that, and it is an estimate. Oh. And an active vocabulary of anyone is, you know, maybe 20,000 to 30,000. So even if that's not a great metric though, but, you know, just as an example, you never know everything, even in your native language. So don't expect to know everything in any language you're learning. I think that's a good lesson to do.
Definitely. And I often, for that reason, recommend to people when they're reading, not to look up every word, because it still happens to me, for example, when I'm reading, particularly if it's the American press, I'll find phrasal verbs that I didn't know existed. But I just get good at guessing them from the context, which I think all native speakers are. And people, sometimes when you're learning a language, you don't realize that it's really useful just to learn to to transfer that skill, try and guess a little bit from the context, if you can just guess the main meaning, and then only look up a word if it's familiar, you know, if you feel like, oh, I've seen that a few times, I think that's probably going to be useful. Because if you look up every word, you might even be looking up words that native speakers don't know.
Or... Yeah, and you don't remember them. And I find it extremely boring as well. It's like, if I have to stop all the time, I might not understand every sentence. It's like, I was reading a bit of Harry Potter, for instance, like a lot of people also do. And yeah, I didn't understand everything. But if I had to stop and look up words all the time, it's just not fun. And then I won't do it. So it's better just to read as much as I can. And if there's something, you know, sometimes it's like, okay, I've seen this word 25 times now. I should probably just look it up just for the future of the story, because it's probably going to come back, you know, like wizard or witch, you know, it's probably useful to understand in this context. But it can be tricky in terms of the enjoyment of it. If you want to look up everything, I think that's counterproductive and you won't remember it. That's I think that's the big, the clincher is just looking up stuff all the time. You won't remember. I remember doing that in school. With paper dictionaries, just like looking up stuff all the time. And the teacher told us to, that was part of the, you know, this is also the ridiculous nature. I don't know how many schools and teachers do this, but when I was growing up, it was part of English lessons to look up like 10 words in the dictionary. So it's like,
it's a good skill to teach.
Is it though? Is it with all these like digital dictionaries and
maybe not nowadays. You probably don't need paper.
It takes like minutes to find a word, and it's like, you could have just told me what the meaning was, but instead you're putting me through this like laborious task of going through like the Oxford English Dictionary. But anyway, I really enjoyed the topic today. We've ended on, like we were talking about before the recording, like I wonder what we're going to talk about. And I think we can definitely say it's all about learner training today and improving the academic, well, not even academic, like just the educational world. But thank you so much for coming on to the show and taking the time today to talk about languages. And before we end, do you want to just give the listeners on a little what's coming up for you in the future on your site or any projects we should know about and where people can find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So at the moment on the site, I've got a mini 5-day course about, and it's just aimed at speaking. So it actually talks a lot about every day. There are techniques similar to the techniques we talked about in this podcast. So things like phrases to use when you have communication breakdowns. So it's all about learner training in terms of speaking. So what techniques can you use to start speaking early on and have your first conversation or improve your conversation so that they feel a little bit more natural? So that's probably the main thing for people if you're learning any language. And we are also we're currently arranging some immersion holidays, which I wanted to, my idea for this came from, I wanted to try and create for people the same kind of experience that I had with Italian. So going back to the beginning when I had that teacher who encouraged us to speak a lot and English was banned. So there was just a nice atmosphere and a nice way to practice the language. So we're doing this on our immersion holidays. So it's a whole week of speaking the language with patient teachers who will help you. So after a week, obviously you improve quite quickly. We're doing that for Italian, Spanish, and also hopefully French this year as well. So if you just sign up to the mailing list on the website, there's a little bar on the right side, or also if you sign up for the 5-day course as well, when we get more places. We've sold out the first two, but we're looking at doing some more. So we'll let you know as soon as we have more spaces available.
Fantastic. Well, that sounds really exciting and could be hugely beneficial to anyone's learning to actually get immersed, I guess, is the big key there.
Yeah.
all up to the ears in the language. But thank you so much, Katie. I know we've run a little bit over today. I appreciate you taking the extra time to get everything sorted, even the technical problems.
No worries. Thank you very much for having me. It's been a lovely chat.
Likewise. All right, that's just all done. That's a wrap.
Great.
Oh, I just pressed the button before we start. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Actual Fluency Podcast. I really appreciate having you here today. Just before you leave, I just want to give a quick shout out to today's sponsor, which is italki. Italki is a tutoring platform where you can find affordable tutors for every language in the world, pretty much. So get started today and get a free $10 credit when you book your first lesson. If you go to actualfluency.com/italki, that's spelled italki. So give it a go and feel how tutoring can really boost and enhance your language learning